Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Robert Filoco. Before I bring him on, I need to remind you that you can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Do check us out on Rockfin. It's where you get all of our premium content. You can also get our regular shows and all the premium content from every creator there on Rockfin. Check that out. That link's in the description. We've got our merch store up so you can get t-shirts and stickers, bags, all kinds of cool stuff. That link's also in the description. And finally, I need to tell you about how you can protect yourself from harmful EMF radiation with EMF Harmonized. They offer protection from harmful electromagnetic frequencies for your phone, computer, or tablet, and your routers. It's just a small disc that goes directly on your devices. With those discs on my devices, I don't feel as groggy. I sleep better at night, and I have more energy during the day, even after spending hours in front of my computer and near my phone. You can also get their wristbands and body relief patches. Just use that link in the description to check out EMF Harmonize and protect yourself today. Tonight, I want to welcome to the show Robert Filoco. After completing advanced studies in psychology, he worked in the field of mental health since 1986, most recently in private practice. He has served as an adjunct professor of psychology at a number of universities and colleges. Since his youth, he has pursued interest in the paranormal, especially UFOs, publishing in the Bulletin of Anomalous Experience, Outer Limits Magazine, and related journals. He is also a children's book author. Robert, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Okay, how are you, Chris?
I'm very good. Thanks for joining us. I've been looking forward to having you on. I've read the papers that you sent me, and very fascinating. We're going to talk about those. You basically created an outline for an integration of quantum physics, karmic theory, schema theory, and therapy, shamanic or etheric realities, and the nature of coincidence. And another paper about the parallels between recent UFO phenomenon and Rudolf Steiner's cosmology. And we're going to talk about those. This is going to be fascinating. But first, this is your first time on the show. I'd love to hear more about just your background in general and what brought you to delve into these topics.
Well, the UFO phenomena I've been interested in since I was quite young. I had an experience of being visited by what were later termed mantid beings when I was about eight years old. We can get into that perhaps, but it was pretty classic experience of apocalyptic visions, ecological disasters, that kind of thing, which I had no frame of reference at that point for it. That was back in the 60s, so I'm kind of dating myself here, but later in reading the abduction literature, which fascinated me, I made a clear link. It was sort of a classic experience, a mantid experience. After that, perhaps because of that, I'm not quite sure, I became very interested in the paranormal from a young age. In terms of UFOs, I actually did an independent study in college on that. I had an anthropology professor who was willing to sponsor that. That turned into a couple of small articles, and I eventually took that work and put it into an article in the Bulletin of Anomalous Experience back in 1994. Since then, I've been kind of in and out of studying the phenomena. Most recently, in the last 10 years or so, I've become a pretty avid reader of Rudolf Steiner. I had previously studied Gurdjieff and some other occult traditions, but Steiner was a revelation to me. I really have gotten a lot out of reading him. And in the article Outer Limits Magazine, which is August of 2020, it's a UK publication. I put together some thoughts and some research I had done, linking, as you mentioned, Steiner's cosmology and UFOs. So to some degree, I come from the vantage point of an experiencer. I'm most interested in the abduction phenomena. I'm not so much interested in nuts and bolts and lights in the sky type aspect of UFOs, although I think that has its place. So that's something I've been studying, reading Hopkins, Jacobs, Yvonne Smith recently. Very interested in tying it into the speculations about star children, about the evolution of man. I see the UFO phenomena as a spiritual phenomena, not so much a technological phenomena, you know, a battle for souls, almost in a Tolkien kind of fashion. So that's, I tie in Tolkien a little bit in the paper as well. So maybe that gives you an overview. In my practice, I've come across a couple of people who have had, a number of people have had unusual experiences, including some, a couple of people have had UFO abductions. So I have some familiarity with that. I've also run into some people who were connected to MKUltra, the CIA mind control studies, experiments. So that opened up a whole nother window into kind of what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we're going to talk about Steiner's work and the connections to ufology today. The more I learn and look into it, the more these spiritual connections that you mentioned become very apparent. And I don't think that you would be able to separate the two once you, you know, learn and get to a certain level of understanding with this. And even with a paranormal phenomenon and the link to consciousness, it's all, you know, connected. And the more I study it and look into it, the more apparent that is. And you can't, once you go down there, you can't get out of it. You know, you got to keep going down that road.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is, again, a lot of people have already connected to the UFO phenomena, the abduction phenomena in particular, with near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences. The Free Research Institute has done some great studies on that. The Edgar Mitchell-sponsored studies, which they emphasize more the positive aspect of the phenomena, which I think is every bit as real as the traumatic aspect. But the tie-in with the paranormal and the spiritual is, that's the root of it. This is a battle, I think, between fundamentally between good and evil. And you know, that's a more complicated question maybe than traditional metaphysics, but I think that's kind of where we're at here.
Yeah, and that's very similar to the conversation I was having with my guest last night. When it comes to your personal experience with this mantis being, was this more of a, I guess, a non-physical experience? Were you taken like during the night in your sleep, or how did this occur?
Well, it was both physical and mental. They were beings who were coming into my room, much like in the abduction phenomena. I don't recall being abducted per se and being taken aboard a ship or anything like that. Perhaps those memories are there. I'm not a fan of hypnosis. Unless you're a really trained hypnotherapist. So I haven't gone that route. I did try to explore it with EMDR, which is a technique for exploring trauma, and came up against a bit of a brick wall with a colleague of mine and wasn't really able to go any further. So there may be elements I don't remember. A lot of what I do remember consciously are beings coming into my room over a period of a number of weeks. It wasn't one episode. And having a download, it was kind of like microfiche, if you're familiar with that. I had a vision of this information being inputted very quickly. And I remember telling them to slow down. It was going too fast, which is something that other abductees or experiencers have mentioned. Right. So there was some sort of information that was being downloaded. I don't know what that is, but I definitely had visions very typical of the mantid experiences of nuclear war, ecological disaster, things of that nature. It was very terrifying. I was very young at that age and had really no idea what was going on. I had never been someone who was a child who was afraid of the dark or anything like that. And the interesting thing for me, or one of the interesting things, is I've never really had any further experiences. Other abductees and experiencers, as you know, have repeated episodes. That hasn't happened. So I'm not sure why, but that was an isolated period of time, but it was more than one incident.
Right. That's very interesting. Now, since we started talking about the spiritual aspect of this, let's start with your paper about Rudolf Steiner and his cosmology. For the audience that may not be familiar with his work or who he is, could you give just a brief overview of who he was and what is the basis of his work and theories?
Well, he's a pretty complicated character, but to give a quick synopsis, he was born in the late 19th century, died in 1924. He was the founder of the Anthroposophical movement, which grew out of the Theosophical movement. So he had been a follower of sorts of Blavatsky and that crew before he split off on his own. He was a clairvoyant from a young age. He also studied science. He claims to have been in touch with Rosicrucian and Freemasonic masters who guided him into developing a scientific approach towards the supersensible. So he developed his own anthroposophical movement, which is connected now to the Waldorf schools, the Camp Hill schools, biodynamic gardening, and some other pursuits. Projective geometry is another pursuit, and it's a somewhat different form of physics and geometry. He's a polymath. I think he was phenomenally intelligent, but he saw his role, his spiritual mission, as primarily trying to help mankind see what was going on in the world in terms of the move towards materialism, technology. He warned against that to a great degree. He wasn't a Luddite who wanted to destroy the machines. He knew the technological development was inevitable, but he wanted to put it in line with human evolution, something that could serve man versus taking over. In his cosmology, he talks about a number of different beings who he describes as beings of hindrance, beings who were assigned a role in human evolution, but who decided to overstep their bounds. And thus they became like the fallen angels of traditional metaphysics. Ahriman and Lucifer are the two primary ones that have influenced human history thus far. And Ahriman he took the term from Zoroastrianism. Ahura Mazda is the good god, Ahriman is the evil god. But he describes him as coming from subnature, as being a ruler of sorts in the subatomic realm, and the bringer of technology, artificial intelligence, computer intelligence to humanity. Also, he's involved with electricity and electronics. That's kind of interesting if you see what's going on in the world now.
Yes, definitely. And that's what I was going to say. If you could give us like a synopsis on your paper, because it links what's happening now with Steiner's cosmology and these Ahrimanic entities, basically.
Hmm. Yeah, he describes Ahriman as having followers. So he describes them broadly as Ahrimanic beings. Again, he died in 1924, long before the UFO phenomena became really well known. So he didn't break it down into types of beings the way ufologists try now. But Ahriman is basically attempting to create a split off eighth sphere, which is an occult concept, by blinding man to his spiritual destiny and his spiritual nature, reducing all of our thought to materialistic scientific thought, or what we might call scientism now, and at the same time, creating a society controlled by technology. Now, keep in mind, Steiner died in 1924. He was talking about machine and human interfaces, back over 100 years ago. He spoke about if we use technology the right way, we can develop machines that are controlled by human consciousness. And each of us has our own separate vibration, and we can then control the machines and have them work for us. He talked about a whole different form of science that could develop from that. His fear was that machines would, under his Ahrimanic influence, become the controllers of humanity. And he was an early person who pointed out the negative effects of electricity and electronics on human health. He considered it to be basically anti-life. And that's simplifying things to some degree, but that's sort of the nature of his take on Ahriman. The other aspect of Ahriman is that he tries to control the political and economic spheres. There's a quote in my paper about how Steiner mentioned if Ahrimanic forces take over, you know, the stock market, financial transactions would become very, very fast and done with a lot of acumen. And he kind of made fun of the stock market back then as being, very slow and very inefficient. It's just a very interesting quote coming from the early 20th century. Now we have supercomputers, trading trillions of dollars on the stock market. So there's the component of electricity and electronics and the subatomic world, which links to CERN, which maybe we can get into, but also the control of politics and economics. Ahriman is interested in control and power. He's interested in controlling human beings and, again, blinding us to our spiritual nature, blocking us from the influences of what Steiner called the good gods, Archangel Michael, Christ. In some ways, Steiner has a very traditional metaphysics. In some ways, he has his own take on that. And he develops his own metaphysics or cosmology, which is part traditional and part occult. So I don't know if that answers all your questions.
That does. And I want to break down a couple of things. The eighth sphere kind of reminds me of this matrix or simulation theory that, we're kind of trapped in this prison type planet situation. And then the other part of the paper, it's very prophetic about what's happening now, especially with the transhumanism movement and everything moving towards this kind of like singularity that Kurzweil writes about. And if you combine that with, the AI and everyone that wants to move towards this transhuman era, wanting to be able to open their garage with a button in their hand or whatever they think it's going to be about, it's going to go a lot further and a lot deeper than that and could go pretty dark pretty quick if it turns out the way it seems like it's going to turn out right now. I mean, so many things that have been warned about from gentlemen like these in the past are occurring right now. So it's something we definitely have to pay attention to, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. The transhumanism is obviously an aspect of the technology run amok that Steiner was concerned about. He was concerned about machine human hybrids or what we call cyborgs now that would be controlled by Ahrimanic beings. The quest for immortality and the quest for the singularity fit in very well with Steiner's vision of what Ahriman was trying to create. This virtual world or matrix, which is the popular term for it because of the movies, is exactly what pretty much exactly what Steiner was describing that Ahriman wanted to create through technology. And now we have we have these surveillance systems, we have chemtrails. There's a lot of I think good research that's been done linking all of those things together into the development of a nanotechnology that creates this this spider web of singularity or interconnection that's for control, it's for surveillance, as well as there's the genetic hybrid element to this where artificial human beings are created for specific purposes, which is one of the nightmares if that technology runs amok. I connect Steiner in that paper also to Lorna Byrne, who's a contemporary Irish mystic. And a lot of her, she claims to be in touch with Archangel Michael and other gods, or other angels, and being given insight into what's going on in the world. And her modern writings align very much with Steiner in terms of her fear of transhumanism, her description of beings in the future that are soulless, who have been created for specific purposes. To be soldiers or to be workers, that kind of thing. This kind of hive mind, this kind of spider-like society that Steiner described was what he was fearing human evolution could head towards if we weren't aware of the Aramonic influences and trying to stop them. At the same time, I mean, he also made it clear that this is a time when positive spiritual forces are available to us if we seek them. And they will also be trying to reach out to us and transform our consciousness in more of an organic way. So I see the positive and the negative aspects of the UFO experiencers and the abduction phenomena in that light. At least it's one way to look at it, that you have these beings who seem benign, you know, who heal, you know, who experiencers develop special abilities. And then you have, you know, a lot of the trauma that's connected to it, the medical experimentation, the, you know, the sexual activity, the creation of hybrids.
Yeah.
So that, and it's very fascinating because there's a lot of ambiguity there in my mind, and I think other people's minds, about, you know, what is really going on here? Is this to serve mankind, to help us develop a higher consciousness? Or is this more in line with what Steiner feared would be created through Ahriman? And I think both are going on. I do think this is kind of a battle between good and evil.
Yes, I agree with you. I think both is going on. And I think that people, researchers like yourself, and researchers that are into the nuts and bolts side, you know, strictly nuts and bolts, and also researchers who are, you know, strictly spiritual or strictly paranormal, need to compare notes and come together more. And I think that we could get a lot further, maybe understand it a little bit more. But you know, they had those nuts and bolts guys, a lot of them are you know, so hardcore with their theories, they just won't even touch some of this stuff. And it's, you know, it's kind of disappointing. But I think that we're getting there to maybe some of them are taking a little bit closer look. I've been encouraged by some researchers lately who have actually kind of flipped their mind over a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's becoming increasingly clear that there's a paranormal aspect to this, both from people who see it as a positive phenomenon and those who see it as more of an evil phenomenon. It's interesting that J. Allen Hynek was a reader of Steiner. Now, Jacques Vallée in his journals mentions that he extensively read Steiner. He read Steiner's books, annotated them extensively, you know, talked about Steiner quite a bit. So Hynek was very interested in that angle from an early age. He was interested in Rosicrucian studies, and so is Jacques Vallée, by the way, you know, who did us a favor by writing Passport to Magonia, and he was one of the first to really do good research on the connection between the paranormal, fairy faith, other dimensions, and UFO phenomena. So I think we are definitely moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's very encouraging.
Yeah, I think there's room for there's definitely some technology going on. Trevor Constable, who's probably the only ufologist who really directly linked Steiner, and also Wilhelm Reich, who he was a Reichian, to the UFO phenomena, you know, talks about how etheric technologies, etheric physics, explains some of the nuts and bolts aspects of UFOs. The fact that they can shut cars down and apparently perhaps cause blackouts doesn't make sense in terms of modern contemporary physics, because it would require such a tremendous energy source that it just seems impossible. But if you look at Aetherian physics, it makes perfect sense. And we're not going to have time to go into detail on that, but I recommend reading Trevor Constable. He was, I think, one of the first to really link the occult literature to the UFO phenomena, particularly Steiner and Wilhelm Reich.
Now, before we get too far away from it, you mentioned CERN earlier. I want to talk a little bit about the connections that could possibly be going on there. There's spooky stuff that I've heard about CERN. A lot of people have some interesting theories about what could possibly be going on. Whenever Jordy Rose was involved with some of the technology there, that was interesting. Some of the TED Talks he gave and things like that. So, yeah. What do you think is the connection there?
Well, if we're opening up other dimensions, you know, where we're really, I think there's possibly two things going on, that these scientists are very naive to what they're opening up the world to. similar to some of the scientists who were involved in the atomic bomb. So that's a possibility. Or there may be occult elements amongst physicists who are involved in this. And there's been some speculation of occult rituals going on at CERN and other places that are kind of black magic, and are kind of welcoming in entities from other dimensions, much like Crowley and some of the left-hand occultists. If you look at Jack Parsons, he was a Crowleyite, and he clearly was into black magic. So there's a tradition there of some of these scientists being involved with black magic. So some of that certainly may be going on. I think the danger is, what Snyder talked about is we really don't understand electricity, magnetism, quantum world. We think we do, but we really don't know what we're playing with. And we're not just playing with quantitative figures and mechanistic theories. You know, we're allowing spiritual entities, other beings, into our dimension who may not be benign. It's kind of like a Stranger Things kind of thing. I mean, the Stranger Things is if you believe in the revelation of the method, that there's stuff out there in movies and media that are kind of cluing us into what's really going on, that's part of the whole process. Certainly, Westworld, Stranger Things are two contemporary sci-fi series that really clue us into what is happening and what's being planned, I think.
I agree with you. I think there's that level of predictive programming. But I think right now there's even a huge aspect of like UFO culture creation going on, to where we're getting accustomed to the idea that these entities exist, and, you know, oh, nuts and bolts UFOs, they may be a threat from, you know, so the government says in the mainstream media. So I don't know. It's very interesting what's going on right now with being pushed into the public consciousness about UFOs from our mainstream media and government, and I find it interesting.
Yeah, I think that's all being crafted by the CIA and intelligence agencies pretty clearly.
Yes, bingo.
I'm not. I think it'd be pretty naive to think that they're really revealing anything. I mean, they're revealing nothing that wasn't revealed in the late 1940s. It's the same scenario. We don't know what it is. Doesn't seem to be a threat.
Yeah, it's like a new kind of lame version of Blue Book.
Exactly. It's nothing new, but they're counting on people having a short memory. They're counting on the kind of this adolescent enthusiasm that people have. Oh, there's aliens out there. And, you know, it's just a way to pass time and move on and pretend they've actually addressed the situation. It's obvious that's nonsense. I mean, there's been talk about maybe they're trying to create an alien invasion, false scenario, false flag kind of thing. That could be. They probably have a couple of different options that they're looking to play out. The question really becomes, you know, why are the intelligence agencies withholding this information? Are they really afraid that we're going to fall apart if we know that there are other beings involved? I actually think if it was just ETs, just physical ETs, that would be pretty easy for people to accept. If it's more of a spiritual phenomena and a battle between good and evil, it kind of makes sense that they're not disclosing a lot of this, you know, particularly if they're sort of on the wrong side of things. I'm not an Elizondo and Mellon.
Oh, gosh.
Mellon to me looks like he's a hostage, honestly. He looks like he's afraid something's going to happen to him if he doesn't say the right thing.
Oh, maybe, man, you're right.
Maybe I'm wrong there. I don't know. Elizondo is an intelligence agent.
Yes.
So can you really trust what he's saying?
That's all he had to say. You know, he's an intelligence agent. Yeah.
The other option is that they're, you know, this stuff was compartmentalized, and that's possible. I mean, Dolan talks about that. Dolan kind of gives Elizondo a pass to some degree and speculates, well, maybe this guy just knows what he knows and is not trying to fool anyone and is not trying to pull the wool over our eyes. Frankly, I'm skeptical because of his background, but I don't know the man, so I'm not, you know, going to necessarily conclude, but generally speaking, I mean, that generic kind of disclosure was, you know, it was nothing. It was meaningless.
Yeah, it was. It's going to be interesting what comes next out of all this. But before we move on to your next paper, I want to touch on the possibility you mentioned genetic engineered humans and hybrid humans, how it's all connected to this phenomenon. And it could be a malevolent thing that goes along with this new transhuman movement. Do you think that there are already possibly these hybrid engineered type of humans that are walking amongst us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and there's a lot of literature on that. I just mentioned a couple of, in that small paper that I wrote, I just mentioned Ingo Swann's experience of being told by a CIA agent that a couple of telepathic beings he ran into, you know, were dangerous and that they were alien. There's plenty of literature on that. So there's some sort of hybrid program going on that's connected, I think, to MK Ultra and other mind control technologies that have been developed for decades. So I definitely think there's a malevolent aspect to that. It's hard for me to understand how it couldn't be interpreted as anything but malevolent, considering the torture that's involved in MK Ultra and related mind control technologies. So I definitely think it's happening. Steiner, I didn't mention this in the paper because I hadn't read this lecture from 1917 yet. But it's getting out there more. And he mentions that one possible destiny for mankind is that we would have to share this planet with what he called ant beings. And they would be spider, they would have this incredible intelligence and acumen. And they would create this kind of spider-like intelligence. And he seems to be describing something like the singularity of the internet, but he calls them ant beings. So he clearly was foreshadowing the potential for some sort of hybridization, some combination of man and some sort of alien being, which I don't think is ETs. I think it's more of an elemental being. He described these beings as part plant, part mineral, and part human. And humans would be forced to share the planet with them. Now, that to me is pretty scary. If that comes to being, and that's clearly in line with like Hopkins and Jacobs and the more alarmist elements of the abduction from the abduction literature, right? So that definitely seems to be out there. Again, Lorna Byrne writes a lot about her visions of a human future where transhumanism has taken over, and we have these designer people that have been created by a ruler class. So perhaps it's some sort of combination of that. But I think there's definitely something to that. The interesting question there is, this seems to be going on for thousands of years. Again, this is what Vallée and other researchers have pointed out. If you look at the changeling phenomena, the fairy faith, you know, stealing babies and that kind of thing, the shamanic traditions. Implants are part of the shamanic tradition that's been around for thousands of years. So perhaps this is a phenomena that's not new. This has been a plan that's been developed over thousands of years, which if we're looking at genetic engineering of some kind, and also terraforming the earth in a way that's conducive to these beings living here, that kind of makes sense that this is a long-term plan. Yeah, if that makes sense to you.
It does. I think that this is definitely a spiritual situation that we're in, and we need to researchers that aren't looking at it this way and aren't looking at it even as a metaphysical type thing. I think it's mainly because at this point the evidence is mounting so much. It's a piling over. At this point, if you're not really looking into that, it's because you're probably afraid to. It's because you might have some kind of dogma or, you know, just this fear of the unknown or paranormal. And I get it. You know, I used to be there with it. I used to be kind of scared of that side of it. But we're not going to get anywhere if we don't look into that side. So, that's really awesome work you've done there. And I want to jump into your next paper, which is really cool because it delves into so many aspects of, you know, the links with quantum physics and like karmic theory and all these things that you wrote about, schema theory, which I want to discuss because I'm not really familiar with, but and the connection with these etheric entities, and you even write about karma and the nature of coincidence. So it's really cool. I'd like you to give the audience synopsis so that they can better understand from you what this paper is about.
Yeah, that paper is more complicated. Getting into Steiner and his cosmology is complicated enough, but I try to integrate in that paper, which is something that's still in process. It's a work in progress. Some means of understanding the nature of human destiny and human evolution. And that took me down a couple of different, into a couple of different areas. And one obviously is karmic theory, which is part of many traditions, particularly Eastern traditions, the idea of reincarnation, the idea that we have multiple lives, that we're here to learn certain lessons. The one dangerous thing in artificial intelligence and the whole Promethean idea of becoming immortal is that it would stop karma. It would stop the process of evolving. If we're the same person for thousands of years, are we truly going to learn anything? Can we make amends for perhaps past mistakes that we've made? Can we really grow as spiritual beings? I think the answer is no. So the essence of that paper is trying to get at the nature of human evolution. And the next step in that writing and that research is to integrate more of the UFO phenomena, Steiner, and the idea that evolution could be stopped and rerouted to a whole different destiny, kind of along the lines of the singularity, the eighth sphere, the occult concept of the eighth sphere, and so forth. Now, schema theory and therapy, I guess, is a bit more prosaic than other things we're talking about. I mean, I am a therapist, so that's primarily what I do. And schema therapy gets into repetitive patterns in people's lives that play out. They were called life traps. They were later called schemas. These are repetitive patterns. For instance, someone who was heavily criticized as a child often ends up with a boss or in a relationship with someone who's heavily critical of them. Almost as if these things are set up for us to learn lessons, to stand up for ourselves perhaps, or if on the other side of it, to develop, to become kinder beings. I don't know of anyone who's linked in psychology, who's linked schema therapy with karmic theory, but to me, it's an obvious link. If you have these patterns that are powerful in people's lives, there's no reason to believe that these patterns started just in this life. There's so many strange coincidences why people run into each other, why people connect, that there seems to be, to me, a plan here. Perhaps a plan that we sign on for from the other side that helps direct our lives to some degree. And that's really what karma is about. And schema is sort of a Western psychology way, I think, of tapping into that pattern and understanding it, breaking it down into different schemas, and helping people understand and challenge these patterns. So there's a practical application of it, but I think it ties in very much to the individual human evolution.
I want to kind of delve off into past lives for a minute. Do you believe that as far as past lives go, we are reincarnating to learn certain lessons and kind of upgrade ourselves spiritually and consciously, or are we choosing to come back, or both possibly? What do you think about that?
I think those two are interconnected. I think we come back to learn specific lessons, to make amends to certain people, to meet certain people, to carry on work that we started with certain people or relationships. I think there's plenty of evidence that and this is something that, near-death experiences have tapped into and other phenomena where people seem to have awareness of the life review and awareness of making a choice to come back or not to come back. Now, I mentioned Sharon Rowlett's wonderful book, Coincidences, which doesn't get into karma at all, which is interesting to me. That's probably the only thing she doesn't talk about. But she looks at synchronicities and coincidences from all sorts of different angles. And the idea that there are beings directing us, these aren't random coincidences. things are set up in our lives for a purpose, so that we can meet certain people, learn certain things, experience certain things.
Sorry about that. We had some technical difficulties, but we are back. Now, we're discussing your second paper that you had sent me. And in that paper, you write about physicist Percy Seymour and the plasma theory, or quantum karma, possibly. Now, this is very interesting. Could you tell us a little bit about Percy Seymour and the plasma theory, and then, you know, your connections with this?
Yeah, Percy Seymour is an interesting a physicist from speculated about a scientific and materialistic explanation for telepathy, astrology, and he introduced this idea of each of us having our own kind of a plasma. Stores information. So he explains a variety of phenomena, like the speculations about the Akashic records, as being due to the fact that intelligent beings are plasmic beings, so we have this original plasmic form, which is pretty intriguing because it helps explain a lot of different things. For instance, twin phenomena, the fact that twins often are telepathic, or they have weird synchronicities in their life histories, he explains as the fact that twins are connected through similar plasmic lines, and that results in them being able to share information and having a special telepathic connection. The twin phenomenon is one of a number of different phenomena. I include that in the paper because it's kind of interesting. It gives a potentially a physical basis for karma. Now, Seymour doesn't mention karma, but he does mention the Akashic records. And Akashic records are basically a storing of all human experience, that forms karma. So it's that and Rupert Sheldrake's theories that I get into about morphic fields are fit well together in terms of developing a scientific model for how some of these things may work. To my mind, at least, that's not the most important part of the paper, but it provides an interesting basis for karma and these connections between beings. He speculates that if two beings have connected to each other, if two human beings have experienced some things together, it's similar to the spooky phenomenon that occurs in quantum theory, where two particles that interact have a memory of that interaction. And this is stored in a plasmic form. So it's a theory that backs up the idea of, or helps explain synchronicity, coincidences, shared experiences, karma, Akashic records, things of that nature.
And you mentioned Rupert Sheldrake and morphic fields. Also, for the audience that may not know, could you explain what basically morphic fields are?
They're pretty complicated phenomena. I recommend that you read Sheldrake himself. But he challenges a lot of the traditional mechanistic theories of reproduction, of how information is transmitted, and he speculates that there's a field that contains its information that we can tap into, that animal group intelligence taps into, human beings can tap into, that goes beyond biochemical or biomechanical explanations. Suddenly learn how to get over an electric fence. When one sheep learned it in one part of the world, it seems like other sheep in other parts of the world learned it. That's just one of many phenomena that he's collected that seem to indicate that there's a group intelligence or a group mind that's connected by what he calls a morphic field. The form of the human being cannot be explained. Reproduction cannot be explained completely through biomechanical means, according to Sheldrake. There has to be some sort of template for that. The morphic fields for the more occult-minded are kind of similar to the etheric fields that that are speculated about in theosophy, anthroposophy, other occult traditions. There's a lot of similarity there. So I tie in Sheldrake and Seymour again to because it's interesting to tie them in, but also because it provides another a scientific explanation for a lot of these phenomena.
Do you think that the more we delve into this understanding of quantum physics, the more mainstream science is going to come to an understanding about paranormal and consciousness and the links of everything in the nature of reality, basically?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think there's plenty of people who are more articulate on this subject than I can be, like Fred Wolf and Capra and you know, a number of other physicists who have, you know, integrated the theories of the paranormal with quantum theory, or explain paranormal phenomena, so-called paranormal phenomena, through quantum theory. So absolutely, yeah. And I think that's where consciousness comes from. I mean, consciousness is primary. The material world is secondary. And, you know, tying it back into Ahriman, I mean, Ahriman is it comes from the quantum realm. He lives in that dimension. And he's trying to kind of blind us to our spiritual nature and reduce everything, you know, to material explanation. To, as Steiner says, kind of mineralize everything, reduce everything to matter versus, you know, the spirit.
Now, I find a very interesting part of your paper is when you write about the nature of coincidences. People just think coincidences happen, and it goes much deeper than that. I'd like to get your theories and thoughts on the nature of coincidences.
Well, again, I think there's some really articulate writers and spokesmen, you know, who describe that phenomena, which was, you know, first coined by Jung. But I think synchronicities, or so-called synchronicities and coincidences, you know, are point to guiding forces in human life, human destiny. I think we're meant to meet certain people. Certain people are put into our world for a specific reason. You know, events coalesce in a statistically unlikely way so that we can experience certain things. I mean, researchers know this. If you get deeply into a topic, books start to appear. People, you know, send you an email about something that you were just thinking about or just writing about. It's almost as if consciousness begins to shape matter versus matter shaping consciousness. And I think that there's plenty of evidence. And again, Sharon Rowlett and her book Coincidences gets into a lot of speculation about, you know, the role of ontology, of other beings that are involved in this. That we have, you know, guardian angels, we have other beings that guide us. So not only do we choose karmically to reincarnate at a certain place and time with certain people, but certain experiences are set up for us that seem random, that seem to come out of nowhere. And I mean, there's a vast variety of those kinds of things. Seemingly random meetings, again, random pieces of information that were given, other coincidences that don't seem to be explainable through, you know, mechanistic means or through any sort of statistical model.
Yeah, and it seems that whatever this force is reacts to different types of either positive or negative energy or just things that you're doing in your life that you might feel good about or gives you a certain feeling. In turn, you know, something great will happen in your life later on down the road. These things, you know, happen all the time. I think they're linked to our energy and the energy that we're putting out there. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
I think so. And again, that's who's interested in a certain topic starts to draw certain people information to him, and,
right.
And I think that happens on an energy level. I think there's validity to the idea that what we put out in the universe is what we get back. I don't think it's as simplistic, certainly not as materialistic as The Secret and some of the sort of the, you know, I do think that there's truth in that. So some of this we can initiate with our own consciousness. I think some of it is created for us. You know, one thing that's talked about by debunkers is the idea of cognitive bias, that we, you know, we ignore certain, like we think of a friend and they call, but there are many times when we think of a friend and they don't call. And what just stands out is, you know, the times when they do. And there's some truth to that. I think that there are coincidences that are not meaningful, but sometimes the volume and the intensity of experiences cannot really be explained by cognitive bias. So I introduced the idea of spiritual bias, that there are other beings out there, again, whether we call them guardian forces or forces that help direct us and guide us, that create situations for us that they know that we'll identify with, that we'll interpret in a meaningful way. So I think that there's such a that some of this is directed. Perhaps it's directed by our higher selves too. It may not be beings external to us. There's a whole idea that we have a higher being that can be in more places than once, that we have our incarnation here as Robert Filoco, and our being is elsewhere, which is an interesting concept. So I think that whole field is fascinating. I think synchronicity, also things like morphic fields, are kind of bridge concepts. They help explain phenomena that we really don't understand, that are so complicated that the best we can do is kind of slap a word on them to explain what's going on. But the algorithm to understand these things, I think, would be incredibly complex, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes perfect sense, and I agree. I think it's something, at this point, pretty beyond our basic understanding, but like you said, with this advent of quantum physics and computing, we may be coming a little bit closer to understanding some of this stuff. Now, for the last few minutes that we have, I want to talk about what you wrote about shamanic or etheric realities. I mean, I know that there's this whole other world that exists just beyond the spectrum of our vision that these entities may exist in, and they may be whole other worlds and communities of these entities that kind of exist in these realms. Based on what you've learned and what you've studied, what do you think is going on with these etheric realities?
Look, the shamanic traditions are thousands of years old, and I think that the true shamans were able to map their what I call an exoecology, an external ecology of beings, and to understand their agendas, their nature, to in some ways use them for help and knowledge, in some ways combat beings that were involved in mischief or in disease. So I think humans have had a window into this for a long time. And I think that's part of just the complex, again, what I call an exoecology. We have on Earth, obviously, which is complex, but we interact with many other dimensions. And UFO phenomena is clearly part of that. The shamanic traditions are part of that. A lot of occult traditions, speak of that and have developed various models to explain it, to describe it. I do think that we tap into that, or people can tap into that through psychedelics, through DMT, ayahuasca, things of that nature. There's definitely a much more complex reality out there. I mean, we see 5% of the electromagnetic spectrum, and that's just in our dimension. There are other dimensions where our senses are not based on electromagnetics. So, it's a vast universe out there. And I do think the UFO phenomenon is a window into that, and we see all these different kinds of beings. Jacques Vallée and John Keel, who I'm sure you're familiar with, speculated, yes, that the elemental realm may be involved, along with the fairy folk and things of that nature. The elemental realm is involved in this phenomena. And again, bringing it back to Steiner, some of his descriptions, his description of gnomes, which are hyper-intelligent, unemotional beings, his physical description of them fits what a gray is.
Right.
Which is fascinating. And he speaks about how Ahriman has allied himself with elemental forces. And one thing I speculate about in the paper is this hierarchy of beings that you see in the UFO phenomena. You have these director beings, the mantises, the taller grays, the humanoids, And you have these robotic-like grays, typically, or smaller beings who seem to be robotic or seem to be of lower intelligence and task-oriented.
Right.
I speculate that this is kind of what Kiel was getting into, what he was starting to tap into, was the nature of elemental beings in this phenomena. I don't think they're the only beings, but I think that they're part of it. It's kind of like the orcs in Tolkien. It's, if you want to draw that analogy.
Now, a lot of the information that we receive about these beings in these realms is basically told to us from contactees and people who have experienced this and people who have channeled these entities. As far as channeling goes, do you think that there's possibility that some of this information that people have channeled is a deception? It's something to throw humanity off the wrong track.
Go ahead. I think so. It takes a lot of discernment, really, to be in the study the paranormal and UFOs for a lot of different reasons. Part of it's the disinformation that comes from, human,
right,
such. Some of it is sort of the noise that's created when any group of human beings starts to study a phenomena, and they start to compete about ideas, there's a politics that developed there. So that's kind of something you have to wade through. But I do think, more to the point of your question, that you have to be very discerning in terms of what is channeled. I do think that there are mischievous beings or even malevolent beings that work through mediums who present information that's typically partly truth and partly nonsense. I think some of this comes from the subconscious of mediums. I'm skeptical of hypnosis unless it's done by a real professional. I'm skeptical of any medium who loses consciousness. I think that there are mediums and psychics who are genuine, and anyone that I know of maintains consciousness in any sort of reading or investigation that they're doing. Anytime you lose consciousness and your being is pushed aside, you don't really know what's coming through.
Yeah, I would have to definitely agree that you definitely have to be careful with some of this stuff. And there's a lot more people who have seemingly become interested into this, even celebrities talking to aliens. So it's very interesting to see what's going on right now. Now, to close out, do you think that with everything happening with the mainstream UFO movement and disclosure and putting this into people's psyche, you think the world is ready to find out that there's not only life beyond our spectrum of vision, but it may not be these little green men coming in tin cans to visit us? This is more of a spiritual, metaphysical, paranormal thing that we really don't have a grasp of yet. Do you think the majority of the population's ready to hear that?
I don't know, but I think they need to understand it. I think that there's a lot of people out there who do understand, and there's an increasing number of people who are moving in the direction of understanding it from that perspective. So I think we're probably more ready than people realize. I mean, the majority of people belong to some sort of organized religion. And in those organized religion, there's a metaphysics that includes spiritual worlds, that includes miracles, that includes all sorts of phenomena that are not, materialistic, not scientifically explainable. So it may challenge their belief systems, but fundamentally, I think most people would be ready. I think it's the scientists who are the least ready to really understand this phenomena, not people who believe in the spirit world or who believe in the metaphysics of any of the major religions, particularly, in my opinion, Buddhism, which is very open. And has very open to other dimensions of reality in the spirit world, and has mapped those worlds for hundreds of years. So, I would like to see us go in that direction. Again, I think that there are more people
who are open to this phenomenon, to this way of viewing these phenomena than ever before. And perhaps more people are incarnating, you know, who are have more of an inclination to be open-minded to these things. It's sort of a counterweight to the scientism and materialism and the emphasis on technology that, you know, Steiner warned about in terms of the Eremonic deception and the kind of the hollowness of science, its lack of a willingness or ability to explain the big questions, you know, the questions of meaning, you know, why we're here, you know, what is human destiny? So that's perhaps a long-winded.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. Well, Robert, thank you. That was fascinating. I really want to have you back on so we can dig deeper into some of Steiner's cosmology when it comes to these entities, these Eremonic entities, and what, you know, what their interest in humanity is and how they could be interacting with us today and throughout history. And there's a lot we can get into with that, so I'd love to have you back on to discuss that.
Sure.
Awesome. Well, Robert, thank you so much for...
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. Well, like I said, we'll have you back on sometime in the future. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we'll definitely see you again next week.